Hey everybody, Shane Presley here. I want to tell you about my friends over at Gaslight. Find them at the corner of Kings Highway and Shaw Boulevard, right there on the hill in St. Louis, Missouri. If you haven't been by, it's a beautiful recording studio attached to a bar. They share a wawa cha cha cha. So grab some tacos, some cold drinks, and hang out and watch one of your favorite bands in the studio recording. It's always just a fun hangout over there. They got a lot of fun events going on, including on May 6th. They started this Gaslight Music School. It's a lot of helping the younger children learn more about music and everything. So they're doing a show, the first Gaslight House Band, and it'll be over at Schlafly Tap Room on May 6th. So check that out. On May 7th, back at Gaslight, there's the Sweet Talker in town from Nashville, and the Hushless will be there recording a Gaslight Sessions. So that's May 7th. And May 17th, Gaslight Sessions with Sean James. So check all these out. Full listing of events at GaslightSTL.com. Follow them on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for more information.
Podcast is kind of like it's like a radio show that's not on the radio, it's on the internet. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's also like my mom. It makes it sound more confusing, doesn't it? It sounds like this.
This is Curtis J, and you're listening to Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast, y'all.
Hey everybody, Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast, coming to you from St. Louis, Missouri, hanging out this today over at the Monocle, right here in the Grove, with Curtis J.
What up, what up?
Hey man, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
This is very exciting for me. I know, I don't know a lot about you personally, and I've just recently discovered your, solo music and stuff, but I've definitely known your name around for a while now. We have a lot of mutual friends and things, mm-hmm. and I thought this would be a lot of fun to get to hang and get to get more of your story and share some songs with everybody.
Yeah, for real. I appreciate you taking some time and talking.
Yeah, definitely. So like I said, we are here at the Monocle, and I want to say thanks for them to letting us hang out tonight. You will be over here on Wednesday, right?
Yeah, Wednesday evening.
Yeah, that's the May 3rd. You'll be here at the Monocle, and that's just going to be you solo?
Yeah, this will be a solo set.
Okay, but if people want the full band experience, they can also come out to Stagger Inn on Thursday the 4th.
Yeah, that's going to be an incredible evening. The LS Express, which is Neil Luke and Drew Schaefer, are opening up of the evening. And then the Curtis J Social, which is the full band plays. And then the like awesomest band I found in St. Louis called Brotherly and their Leather Jackals. They're going to close the evening.
Those guys are so good.
Man. Incredible. Yeah. I literally fear for the lives of every person in that room and the whole town of Edwardsville.
Yeah.
They will light this stuff on fire. It's.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for it.
The story comes up a lot, but I'm like, just incredibly grateful that it happened the way it did. But like, they started following me online on Instagram and stuff, started liking a bunch of my stuff, and it's just funny that now they have like the stickers to say, who the hell is Brother Lee, and it's like, and that's pretty much exactly what I said. Like, I'm like, who are these guys? I went on their Bandcamp and listened to their first EP, and I was like, who are these guys? And I need to talk to them right now. This is incredible music.
Yeah.
And then I went and sat with them, started talking, and they're like the coolest guys too. And like, so we've become real good friends over the last like 2.5 years. And I had them play my birthday party last year for the show and stuff. And like, just I'm really glad that the music has brought us together, and like they've become some of my best friends now. So
yeah, they rock so hard. I actually just met and found out about them about a month and a half ago.
Yeah.
I had my South by Southwest shows and everything booked since like December, February, January or so, through working with, just a myriad of people, but Justin Johnson was one of them that was, well, we were kind of mutually helping each other book some extra shows while we were in the Austin area. And Justin, or somebody had reached out to me and said, hey, Brotherly and the Leather Jackals just had their show dropped on the Friday night when they were going to be in Austin. Do you have anything that you can do about that? And I'm just like, oh, man, I'm pretty sure our Friday night thing's booked. I mean, I'll try.
Yeah.
I don't know any idea of what they sound like. I had only heard of them just as I was leaving for New York 2 years ago. And so I'm like, all right, I talked to the venue and I got them booked for that Friday night thing. And I was like, I guess they can close out. It's going to be an outdoor festival kind of thing. I'll have the venue check them out, make sure everything's cool. So the venue is like, yeah, sure. We give them the thumbs up. And so we get there that day and I get a chance talking with them and they're incredible dudes. And we're just yucking it up about all the people we know in St. Louis. And so they plug in, they sound check. At about midnight, outdoors, South by Southwest, Friday, Austin, Texas.
Yeah.
And it was the loudest rock show I had been to in years. Years. Yeah. I mean, this was Motorhead. It was incredible. I loved it. But the venue owner was there, and I'm looking at them. I'm like, they're going to put an end to this? They're literally going to just pull the electricity. And they let them fly. It got done with probably about an hour set. And I'm like, it's over. It's over. Totally over. They're never going to talk to me again. I totally shot myself in the foot. And the venue owner rushed up to them and said, encore, encore, like 5-6 more. And they popped right into like Sunshine of Your Love.
Yeah.
But the loudest, most gnarly version I ever heard.
Sure.
Felt like they were going to like, somebody was going to skateboard over the top with them with Napalm Death and like Monster Truck Rally in the background. And yeah. Vietnam Choppers. It was insane. It was so cool.
Yeah.
So they, I'm a big fan now.
Definitely, man. I just saw them recently over at Vintage Vinyl, which was super cool. Like just to see, you know, full rockin' band in the shop there, and yeah. Of course, like it was huge for them. I know because like seeing their name on the marquee and actually getting to play such a, you know, a historic place for us. I mean, anybody from St. Louis is. I know, or the world, really, you know, around the country, that Vintage Vinyl is well known.
It is. I mean, it's a true staple, and I know the first time that I was just about to actually, my very first concert with Kentucky Knife Fight was at Record Store Day in 2010.
Oh wow!
I'm not an original member of Kentucky Knife Fight. I came in just a few years after.
Yeah.
And they had definitely already established a good name for themselves on the Illinois side, where they're all from. And where we all went to college at SIU Edwardsville, an incredible name. And they started popping into the St. Louis market very, very well. I know Bob Reuter was a big fan and spinning them very often, and Fred Friction. And so as I'm like doing our very first show together with me as the new ingredient, it was Record Store Day at Vintage Vinyl. And my heart about burst because I knew what this meant for myself.
Sure.
And what was it going to mean for the, I don't know. Future of me looking back and going, I did that.
Yeah, definitely, man.
Yeah.
Get back to it. So you were saying Kentucky Knife Fight and stuff, and like an SIUE and things. So born and raised in the area, in the St. Louis area?
I'm from about an hour south of St. Louis called Perryville, Missouri.
Okay.
About a 6,000 person town. I lived there, born, and then all my schooling was done there. Graduated high school there. And my father still lives there, and 10 of my aunts and uncles are many of them, and a lot of cousins. And I have a deep connection to that small town where everyone really gave me a good opportunity to experiment, you know, as being like one of the few bands in the area at when I was growing up. We would get to play the after party for the whatever, or we would play the local talent show, or we would say, hey, we want to throw a New Year's Eve concert in the high school gym. And nobody else was asking them because there were no other bands in town. So sure, I mean, yeah, whoever you got. And then we'd have to get like bands from other cities to come and play because nobody else was there.
Sure.
And they really gave me an opportunity to practice and kind of get through some of my growing pains. Not all of them. I'm still going through a few of them. But yeah, that was my early grounds of cutting my teeth.
Yeah. I think it's crazy, like, hearing, like, that kind of stuff. And then, like, I think of, like, I don't know, whatever, when you said that, I went to thinking about how ZZ Top, like, used to play school dances and stuff. Like, you know, in their town and things like that. Now, of course,
they're huge.
Well, they blew up into being, but it's just like, it's crazy to think that like some of those early gigs that some of these bands and artists played and stuff, and we all got to start somewhere. So
yeah, I was watching a documentary recently, and I saw these photos, and I don't think there was video, maybe some audio, of Lou Reed and the Velvet Underground playing like fraternity parties up in Boston. And it was like, that was just a regular thing they did. Yeah. And they had like a 4 or 5 hour dance set, you know, at everything from Louie Luau to, Frankie Valli stuff. And like, they would do all of that. And that fed so much in to what made them better songwriters. Because they already were proficient players. Even though sometimes you think, oh, Velvet Underground, they're just doing this droney rock and roll whatever thing. They had some grit and some experience that they had really gained from just getting out there and playing. Or like Bruce Springsteen, man, that guy played 5 hour shows 4 nights a week for years, and we think of him as just this big entertainer now.
Right.
I mean, that guy put in more dues than you could imagine.
Yeah, it's a hustle.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing, did music lead you up this way then? Or?
Yeah, I started going to jazz camps when I was about 16 or 15 or so. I just really found the guitar just before I turned 15. And I started going to these jazz camps to learn how to play Metallica and Nirvana better, which sounds so backwards, but I knew that, oh, you got to learn music theory and, you know, the cool chords and guitar solos and all that stuff. And I wanted to use jazz as the avenue to be able to express myself and just have the ability to speak well, instrument-wise. Mm-hmm. And so I went to these jazz camp week-long, and we're just playing morning to evening music all day long. And my junior year of high school, maybe my senior year of high school, I got recruited by my, who would soon be my professors at my university, to come up to Southern Illinois, Edwardsville, to study music. So I studied jazz guitar performance at SIU. I graduated with an undergrad degree there and then a master's.
Very nice.
Yeah.
And then started jamming with Kentucky Knife Fight soon after?
Or? Yeah. I moved into St. Louis in 2009 from the Illinois side. I had had a really interesting like 2003 to 2009 where I was performing with this incredible human named Matt Steele. He was a country singer-songwriter. And he had big visions of really bringing like the arena rock world of like, you know, Garth Brooks in the 90s and like bringing that to the forefront with very heartfelt music and very sincere and really thought out country songwriting. It most definitely wasn't outlaw country.
Yeah.
So it wasn't in that vein, but it was... And it wasn't as cheesy or like bland as like Kenny Chesney or, you know, like the really, really, really bad vanilla stuff.
All right.
It was his own thing. So he and I played, I mean, good 500 shows in those like 6 years I worked with him, or 7 years I worked with him. And he became one of my very, very closest friends. I moved in with him in 2009. He gave me my first place to stay in St. Louis. And even though, it's still to this day, I don't super, super identify as like country is my music of choice or my genre. We were doing the 4 and 5 hour bar gigs. I learned so much and I developed a deep appreciation for a few of the people that do influence me today, even if I don't do country the same way. One of those people is Willie Nelson, and the same way that Django Reinhardt and jazz singers influenced Willie Nelson, but he's not a jazz musician,
right,
is the same way that Willie Nelson, even though I'm not a country musician and I don't have a ton of twang in what I do these days, he really, really influences my outlook on making very clear, interesting music.
Yeah, and he's, one of the best writers, too. Like, I mean, the guy is like... I think that, you know, people know a lot of his stuff, but I mean, I think people forget, like, Patsy Cline's Crazy and stuff like that. I mean, he wrote these songs that other people did and stuff, even though...
Yeah, so. Yeah, a very, very big, large amount of them. I go back and listen to his early years records, like 3 Days and Hello Walls,
yeah.
and Crazy. I mean, fairly early one. Yeah. And I just die. It's such good music. The one thing I think about it, content wise, he really sings a lot about how much he loves someone or how much he has been heartbroken by someone. And I know he tackles a few other topics here and there with "Mama, don't let your babies grow up to be cowboys," and this and that. But I'm like, man, that guy talks about love a lot. Mm-hmm. I hope he's doing all right. I hope he did well in that market in some way, somehow.
I feel like that's probably got to be one of the biggest like motivators out of write. I mean, is either being in love or heartbreak. I mean, that's like, you know, how many songs probably fall in that, those two categories?
So many. You know. I've made a really conscious decision, and I'm not quite there yet this year, but a lot of what I've chosen to do with my new repertoire as I'm writing new songs for Curtis J and the Curtis J Social is I've written a lot of love songs with my old band Yankee Racers and worked on some with Matt Steele and this band. I really care about love. I'm kind of a romantic in a lot of ways and very sentimental in a lot of ways, but I know there's so much going on in the world that it's time for me to try to write something about, you know, maybe ordinary things that are happening to us every day or extraordinary things that we just haven't been able to put to words yet. And it's been allowing me to try to be present and really think about my place in the world and how I affect people.
Yeah. Kind of like you played a couple tunes live for me today, live Unplugged, and you played a song called Home Truth.
Yeah.
That's a little more of a social meaning behind it?
Yeah, we had a very big election last fall, as every person on planet Earth knows, and a very divisive one. And my hometown and my home state of Missouri went towards, was red, and a lot of people on the East Coast in New York, where I live, do not think in the same manner. And it split a lot of homes. I kind of talk with a lot of people on the East Coast that have family in the Midwest or the South or, you know, the far West. And they're having difficult times talking with their family because the politics of our day are so present in everything we say and everything we do, and we're really believing in this side and that side. And the song Home Truth is about how painful it is that it's being divided, and that we really need to figure out how to resist the urge to immediately disband from one another, and we really need to try to come together. Because if we're not having this conversation, especially with the people that we disagree with, then we're never going to fix anything.
Yeah. Yeah, I think even, you know, by region, but I think there's even become like a divide among the age different, you know, from our, you know, a lot of, I think a lot of children don't necessarily agree with what their parents' views are and stuff.
Yeah.
And like in that kind of same sense too, like, so I don't know. It's a tricky thing, man. But yeah, I think we all have to learn to find that common ground and where what we do agree on and things. And
yeah, and then the common ground. I mean, there's a plethora. It's really deep. We share so much, and I think one thing that maybe upset some on the left in the early 2000s was this kind of revigorization of patriotism, in which maybe the right had tried staking claim to that as if patriotism was a political thing. And I know myself, I'm very, very proud to be from the United States of America, especially now that I've traveled to many continents across the world, many countries. And I'm with so many people from across the world in New York. We really have a wonderful thing going on, and there are many things I want to see improved, namely education, but that's a whole podcast worth right there. That I'm really proud to be American, and I think patriotism is so important.
Yeah, I agree, man, for for sure.
It's a year we won't forget, though we all may want to appalled with what we've seen, to hear what you believe. We grieve this alone. Patience slips at the holidays. We yell broken and blue. Our home truth, family's torn in two, and we are blaming you. We grieve this alone. Isn't it crazy now what we fear? Wishing is crazy now, that is clear. Everyone sees it now, can't you hear? We're blaming society as we look in the mirror. I can't breathe the word of this, ignorance is your bliss. To remove from the other side, to know what I have left behind, we grieve this alone. I once said to hell with this. Now I've seen a different tune. Too removed from what we hid, must resist. We cannot quit, but leave this alone. Dance around this town. Dance around this town again. Dance around this town. Dance around this town. Dance around this town. Dance around this town.
You played another tune you wanted to share, another live one called See You Soon.
Yeah, I know, you know, there.
This is kind of the other end of it, a little different.
Yeah, you know, I'm not going to not touch on love or not touch on personal relationships and how we're connected, because, I mean, that's kind of, that's who we're talking to and who we're talking about. We all want to be part of the story.
Yeah.
And See You Soon's about... maybe somebody that you haven't seen in a long time. Maybe somebody that you're really going to go see for the first time in so long. And It's like you just don't know what's going to happen. It's that first time of having that conversation, or the first time having the conversation again, and the excitement that comes with it, and not really knowing what you're going to expect.
Yeah, very cool. Do you?
Watch all you and I do. Bring me back to you. Don't know what's in store. You catch me off guard when you throw me down to the floor. Show me what's in store, and I'll see you soon. I can't promise I won't stare. And when I'll see you soon, read my eyes if you dare. Read my eyes if you dare. Bring me back to all the things I thought that I once knew. Bring me back to you. My feet touch the ground. Only when you're not around do my feet touch the ground. Cause you are my queen, my favorite human being. And I'll see you soon. I can't promise I won't stare. And when I'll see you soon, read my eyes if you dare. Read my eyes if you dare. Gone are the days of running away. Let's start this night and let those questions fade. And I'll see you soon. I can't promise I won't stare. And then when I'll see you soon, read my eyes if you dare. Read my eyes if you dare.
Hey, looking for some new music? Come check out Music Record Shop in the Dot Zack building in St. Louis, Missouri. Or shop online 24/7 at musicrecordshop.com. Be sure to follow along on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. They're always giving away free tickets or records and all kinds of things, so it pays to support. New records in every Friday, and including this Friday, they'll have records from Gorillaz, J. Cole, U2, Taking Back Sunday, and more. Follow the list if you want to see some more at musicrecordshop.com. And there's always fun live in stores and all kinds of other things, so keep an eye out for more events coming up. And also, they have a great local selection, so if you have heard some bands on the show, you want to check them out, go over there, take a look at their local selection. Or if you have a record yourself that you'd like to get on the shelf, see about how you can make that happen. Musicrecordshop.com.
You mentioned, you know, living in New York now and stuff. Is this, has that become a common thing for you, like coming home back to St. Louis and playing? I mean, do you kind of rekindling these relationships and stuff.
Yeah. Actually, one of my favorite things on social media stuff is that I'm just doing the hashtag see you soon, which obviously plays into the song, but it's also like I'm so excited to see the people I'm connected with. As I played with Kentucky Knife Fight, we had many years of going down to Texas and many years going to Chicago. I mean, just as two of the bigger markets we hit very, very often. And I just got to play both of them in March, and I got to reconnect with people that I hadn't seen in a year and a half or 2 years since the Knife Fight days. And it was the most exciting thing through February, going, March is coming, March is coming, March is coming, knowing that I'm going to see these people soon. I had a St. Louis stop on that run too, on that tour. And as I got to the venue, I got into town at like 4 o'clock, and I was hitting the stage at 7. I was pretty burnt out from just traveling so much. And as I looked out and I saw so many people that had been a part of my history in St. Louis, both musical and personal, that energized me for the next month.
Yeah.
If there's any time when, you know, you miss a train, dinner's $50, not $20 like you expected, you know, your boss reams you or whatever. Anytime New York can kick you down a little bit, the memories of the people that you're connected with can revitalize your day. And I'm very grateful for St. Louis, especially even this tour. My voice is going hoarse because of how many people I'm connecting and talking to. It's the greatest joy.
For sure. I was thinking, you know, this is sort of new for you, right? Just kind of being this front man. Like you're saying, you're adjusting to singing every night and stuff and you know, having to take on that role. Is the songwriting always been there, or is this a sort of a new thing
as
too?
Well. You know, early on, when I first started playing, I was writing very, very often. The songs were pretty sophomoric, because I was a sophomore. You know, like, they were pretty goofy. And so I've had that history. When I went to music school, it was very important that I took as much knowledge from them as I could, and that was me putting writing on the side. I started having, you know, the Socrates moments of knowing how little you know, and that kind of put the fear in me of, wow, I have to soak up all of the things I can, and that meant my instrumental side, which I'm really grateful for now, because as I go to write songs, as I go to perform with other people or even for myself, I don't have as often a scenario in which I'm like, ooh, I don't know what that chord means, or I don't know which chord could possibly go here. I've got many options because I worked really, really hard on getting my instrumental side of me being very self-sufficient. So the songwriting, it took a little bit of a backseat in the 2000s, but around, by the time I was in grad school, I felt that there was something to write about again. Yeah. And so I started the writing process again as I joined in Kentucky Knife Fight in 2010. First off, we already had, you know, a 25, 30 song repertoire in which I needed to really dive into and be comfortable with. But as I was this new ingredient in this chemistry project, I started getting my voice heard and starting saying, hey, I wrote this cool little riff, or I've got this shell of an idea for a song, or here's a lyric that I think could be really powerful. And I started getting a lot of confidence at the end of the Knife Fight years, because I also took a big role in producing. So, you know, saying, I think we should do a guitar solo here, and maybe just drums for this part, and ooh, this song should be banjo, not me on guitar, and oh, background vocals, and all of those little production things, I really got an awesome handle for, because I, again, just like my younger days, I had a playground to experiment on. Those experiences fulfilled me so much and gave me another set of skills that I now get to use as I'm having to do this 360 and by myself. But at that same time with Knife Fight, around 2011, 2012, we had such an established sound that I wanted to start writing all the other things I was feeling. What about my Bob Dylan side? What about my, you know, really, really indie rock side, the Franz Ferdinand side, or, you know, the Wilco side? Knife Fight didn't quite do that. And so I started with my best friend Nathan Jatko, the Yankee Racers. And so the Yankee Racers were, it was he and I writing all the songs. And at that point, I became the front man of that project. Mm-hmm. That was my first tiptoe back into that realm since the early 2000s.
Yeah.
And as I started doing that more and more often, I knew that's the route I wanted to really focus on. And I it took the blank slate that was my move to New York to kind of cut all of the, okay, Knife Fight years are done, Yankee Racer years are done, Old Light years are done, all the other groups I've worked with. It's now time to become a lifer and now do what I want to do.
So are you working on a record now?
I am. I was actually just having a conversation today with these two producers in New York. One is a guy that had done some stuff for Sugi Otis and the North Mississippi All-Stars, and he's real tight with the Oxford, Mississippi world, Fat Possum record label and Big Legal Mess. And,
nice.
He cut his teeth down there, and he's from that area. He's going to be producing See You Soon as a full band record. We'll probably start recording and tracking in May when I get back to New York after this tour. And then a second producer that is from LA, but he lives in Brooklyn now, really, really into that groovy indie rock world. Really talented. And we're talking with him about doing this kind of groove-based cover series, so songs that were usually much more kind of singer-songwriter, solo piano thing, or, you know, just voice and guitar, that kind of thing, putting a full band groove behind that and doing that very, very polished New York R&B thing. One of the songs we're going to tackle with him in May, the second I get back, is a Harry Nilsson cover of a song called Without Her.
Okay.
And that one's, I'm so excited about that.
Yeah, that sounds interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we do have a current single with the band, with us, Curtis J and the Social, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's up on, you can find that on Bandcamp and iTunes and Spotify and all your, wherever you get your music at today.
Absolutely.
As well as CurtisJSocial.com. And that's Alone and Mistaken is the title of the single. And that's is this kind of more of you guys are going for? I mean, this is, or is it still going to kind of touch on a lot of different stuff throughout the record?
This was the initial Curtis J song. This was like the initial one that I was like, all right, now that I've written that and recorded this with our full group, I've got a good roadmap of at least like a starting point. Like you put your pin in and okay, this is where you're going from and where's our destination. I'm really proud of the song. It's dark. It's real moody, and dynamic. Mm-hmm. The trumpet performance on there was from Adam Hookey Funky Butt Brass Band fame and many other fame. Madam.
Now he's taking his opportunity in the spotlight, being a front man and singer songwriter and stuff too. So yeah, it's really cool to see. What I mean, that guy's just incredible talent. Yeah,
incredible. I've got the smallest quick side story with him. We were playing this festival at SIU Edwardsville when I was in college. It was kind of near the end of my college years, and my friends just put us on this festival, and they're like, have your band play. Well, I didn't have a band, so I just kind of put together my favorite players in town, including Cody Henry and Andy Ament and Nick Jost, the bassist, and Adam Hookey on trumpet, and Jerry Mazuka on drums. And I'm like, okay, let's go for this. I don't know what this is going to be. So we started playing some of our songs, and it was going okay. And Adam's like, let's play I Feel Good from James Brown, and I'll sing it. And I go, all right, man. So he grabs the mic, and he just starts screaming and dancing and jumping up and down, and it was the most incredible thing. And he totally changed the entire set.
Yeah.
He's so dynamic and so larger than life.
Yeah.
He saved the day, and I know many people feel that same way about him very often. He's incredible. I can't say enough about Adam Hokey.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Alone and Mistaken, it's... I'm very proud of the song. It's going to be in the set for a very long time. I'm anxious for when that song will be the old stuff.
Sure.
And what does that mean going forward? It's a good template of and a good representation of what I like and what my voice sounds like and what mm-hmm. my producing can sound like. But I'm really interested to see where my songwriting goes.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Another thing I saw since you were here in town, you just recently recorded over at Gaslight also,
mm-hmm.
or you performed over there. I'm assuming that all recorded too and everything. And
yeah.
Were you doing some demos kind of stuff? Or were you...
Yeah, I played a lot of new songs. Yeah. I did a demo of Home Truth that we did for your show today.
Yeah.
I really wanted to get that one solid and see... what I can take from that and
right.
see if I want to tweak anything. We're going to try to record that one as a full band sometime over the summer too.
It's such a cool place over there too.
It's so great.
Yeah.
So great. JB, who owns it and started the thing, has a really interesting vision. And as I tell this to New Yorkers, they're like, if a place like that was here in town, it would be like, you know, sold out. Like yeah. everybody would go to that every night. So I applaud the vision, and I can't wait for that to continue on and keep growing.
Yeah.
Well,
they it's kind of turned into like a label as well. Like with all the recording they've done, we mentioned Brother Lee and the Leather Jackals. Just
yeah.
they were a part of this like five records that were released on the one day, and it's just for me that was pretty unheard of for people drop you know putting five record release parties together in one, and but. All of them are friends, and all of them are part of Gaslight, and all recorded at Gaslight and stuff. So I thought that was really something unique, and I think it's a nice sentiment to what St. Louis music has become. Like, you know, it's just like there's a lot of people working together, and it's just a nice community we've built here and stuff. So
yeah, the collaboration has always been real and palpable. It's really cool. You don't always get that to the same level in New York, where there are so many people and so many things you have to do. And yeah, maybe on Thursday evening we can't come over to collaborate because we have to go. You know,
right.
we have to go do this gig so we can pay our $2,000 a month rent.
Yeah.
Sometimes that happens. So it makes the community a little bit spread apart. And I do miss the togetherness of the St. Louis community. I mean, it's real. And yeah. I beam about it while I'm in New York because it's unique.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you, as somebody that's done it now, like, you know, going to New York, making the jump and or the leap to, do you have any advice for, you know, these other people maybe thinking about moving out of town?
Yeah. Some of the reasons for moving to New York for myself were personal.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to be somewhere new, somewhere exciting, and really challenge myself with something I hadn't done before. The level of people that you get in a much larger city in LA, Chicago, Paris or Berlin. It's such a hub for international creativity
yeah.
that you can't help but soak up some of that. And you know that if I'm listening to some of my favorite records and some of my favorite bands, and they just keep consistently coming out of New York, what does that tell me? That's not to say that like the innovators of our 20th century American music, so many of them point to St. Louis. Chuck Berry,
right.
Nelly, Miles Davis, Ike and Tina Turner, Henry Townsend, Benny Smith,
yeah.
Little Milton, Pokey LaFarge now.
Yeah.
The Urge, so many dynamos. I mean, serious, serious, serious innovators. So I don't scoff at that. It's real, and they've changed the landscape of it all. Mm-hmm. I continue to believe that that can happen again in St. Louis. It's just like Pokey. It's just determination and really putting yourself out there and focusing and being serious about this, not just messing around. That same seriousness is necessary if you want to go to another city, either for personal reasons or professional reasons. There are many, many good reasons to be in New York for professional reasons. For myself, I started touring in Europe in 2013 as Yankee Racers and with that material. And I just started going there as Curtis J last January. The last Yankee Racers tour, it was just me for 2 weeks going, you know, Prague and Berlin and Germany and Austria and whatnot and Poland. And it was essentially a Curtis J tour. I just was the moniker of Yankee Racers, and I was playing most of that repertoire, but I started peppering in the new stuff I was writing for Curtis J. Anyway, being in New York gets me a 6-hour flight to London, 6-hour flight to, Frankfurt or Amsterdam or something. For me, that's important because I wanted to continue growing in that market. And also, again, personally, I've had such a growth of understanding the world and excitement from learning other languages and other customs and learning about other cultures. That happens in New York for myself on a daily basis, in which I have to speak 3 languages before I even get to work. And then also the availability for me to get to Europe faster to continue to grow my professional side.
Yeah. I mean, I've never got to do much traveling yet, but I would think like that would be a lot of fun to like you're saying, just to experience the culture, even just in New York there, you get to so much because there's so many people, so many different cultures represented, in that city. Being Ellis Island and everything, everybody coming there, that's a lot of people stuck around and stuff. So
yeah, and then new people come in all the time.
Yeah,
and I'm one of them.
Right, but yeah, I think that'd be a lot of fun. How about pizza? You get into? Do you still come home in the St. Louis pizza, or how's it?
I saw Jimmy Kimmel gives St. Louis a lot of grief that he doesn't like their pizza.
Right.
And John Hamm has to go defend it all the time.
Yeah.
Forget Jimmy Kimmel, whatever. I like St. Louis pizza. I prefer it over Chicago pizza,
sure.
So we're good there.
Yeah.
There are 2 incredible places in New York that I kind of swear by because they're kind of life-changing pizza. So... it's difficult in that regard. I work right next to one of each at the New York City Guitar School on 30th and 8th Avenue. And right there on 8th Avenue is this place called Pizza Supreme. Whoa. it's probably the best in Manhattan.
Yeah.
Besides this other place, it's like the strange donuts of pizza.
Okay.
In the Lower East Side, right half a block away from the Delancey, this little music venue on Delancey. I can't remember the name of that place. I only went there once, but it's not as strange as strange donuts, so it's not like Butterfingers on top of a thin slice of pizza, but it's just like ingredients that I wouldn't put on normally.
Sure.
So good.
Yeah.
I'm going there ASAP. Actually, the second I get home, that's the first thing I'm going to do.
Sure. You said The Urge. Steve Ewing owns Steve's Hot Dogs, 2 locations, and like the same thing what he's doing with hot dogs. People are used to the Chicago dog or whatever, but he's putting one of my favorites is the Backyard Barbecue, and it's got pork and beans,
that's rad.
Bacon, potato salad, and sweet baby Ray's barbecue sauce.
I love sweet baby Ray's.
Yeah, so. You get the whole picnic on one hot dog and
that's incredible.
Yeah,
I applaud that. I went over the first time I went over to TikTok. I had one of Steve's hot dogs. And I was like, it was not get better than this. Yeah. I think they were doing a CD preview of a group. And so I'm at this incredible cool bar that was just very close to where I was living. And next door is Steve's Hot Dogs. Right. So I was like, this is awesome. And yeah. I was just leaving St. Louis when that was really starting to pop. And
yeah.
Kind of bummed about that. That was incredible.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's I love what he's, to see that the success of that. He opened up in the second location now and stuff. And
so cool.
And things like that. But he's one of the hardest working guys in town. You're between the doing gigs all the time still, and then mm-hmm. the road shows, and doing the hot dogs and stuff. He's always hustling.
Totally. I admire him. He's a great guy.
Yeah, and he's become a good friend.
Nice.
It's very exciting for me to kind of go make that transition from being a big fan as a kid to now being a friend and he's been on the show a couple of times and stuff, and it's been super cool. So
it's easy when he's like such a approachable guy.
Yeah, super down to earth and stuff. So we'll close this thing out. I appreciate you doing this. It means a lot, and like such a fun time we're getting to hang out here at the Monocle. And again, you'll be back here. You'll be on stage here Wednesday
evening.
May 3rd in the evening. Mm-hmm. There's a comedy show before you, the early show. So if you want to come out and laugh and stick around all night, then come on and do that.
Yeah. You laugh at 8 and cry at 10.
Yeah. And then, the full band at Stagger Inn on Thursday the 4th with LS Express and Brother Lee and the Leather Jackals.
It's going to be incredible. This is I've been looking forward to this tour for months.
Yeah, very cool. And again, get everything at CurtisJSocial.com. You get your Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, all those links you can find right there. And pick up the new single, Alone and Mistaken, and hold you over until we get the some more recordings out there for you.
Totally.
So, but yeah, thank you so much. I appreciate you doing this.
Yeah, me too, man. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'd rather be
want you to hear what I mean when I want you to bleed when I bleed. I'd rather
Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Well, yeah, that was it.